This hour of the Jason Ranch Show is brought to you by the Brian Suits Morning Show, heard weekday morning 6 to 9 right here on KTTH. Lots of news happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? A Jason Rant exclusive.
Jen Mason is the owner of Wink Wink, which bills itself as an all-ages, identity-inclusive sex shop in the city of Bellingham. Now, it doesn't just sell sex products like sex toys and books and lingerie and what have you. It also offers, courtesy of Mason, 50-minute sex coaching sessions. So if you're in the market for a gift for Father's Day, next Mother's Day, birthday, you know exactly what to give your significant other.
What kind of coaching sessions are we talking about?
This is the better way to do things, is my guess. Hmm. I think it's more like, here's how to be comfortable with a partner. Here's how to truly embrace intimacy.
You don't have to, like, bring your own film and, like, get it critiqued by, like, a coach or something?
I do think
there's film breakdown sessions.
That should be part of it. Just like, okay, see at this angle here. Nope, there you go. Like, maybe something like that. But that's not really what this is about, because in addition to those jobs, you know what she does? We've talked about it in the past. In fact, almost a year ago to the day, I did the story of how we discovered that Jen Mason is also the school board director for the Bellingham School District. So that's interesting. Now, I don't think that it's wrong to own a sex shop. Like, I don't think it's immoral. I don't think it's immoral to hold both that job as well as a school board position. I do, however, think it's wrong for her to host a queer youth open mic for ages 0 to 18 at said sex shop.
So it's like a Venn diagram where, like, there's two circles, mm-hmm. but then the overlap part is where there's a problem.
I don't think that's a Venn. Is that a Venn?
Yeah, the two circles.
I'm thinking Gantt chart.
No, yeah, I'm thinking Venn diagram. The two circles. Right where they overlap, that's the no-no zone that we're talking about here?
Yeah, I feel like that's the no-go zone.
Okay.
I think that when you've got a child who is about to perform music or poetry or just tell a story, which is the three options you have as a performer, I think it's wrong to have them do that while they're next to a sex toy or even in the general vicinity, because Mason actually did respond to my request for comment, which is shocking because the first story I did about her, she did not. And I'm grateful that she did. And she pointed out that it's technically not in the sex shop. It's within the sex shop, but it's separated by a wall, this venue part, and a curtain door. But I'm assuming a lot of the people who will attend will go through the front entrance of the space, which will take them through the sex shop. And after all, it is an all-ages sex shop, as you remind us on your website, Mistress Mason. Is that no? I don't know. She might not be into the dom. Is it dom? Sub-dom? I don't know what those
You're are. Over my head there. I don't know about all that, Chief.
In my head, I just am picturing her in like a leather getup with a whip.
I don't think she has the dress.
I don't think she does that.
Okay.
But I'm just saying that's how I view her. I think having kids present at a sex shop is bizarre. I think hosting an open mic for kids as young as, you know, 10 months old is obviously nonsensical. I think that pretending a 9-year-old is queer is delusional. I think it's delusional. Now, the school district said it doesn't endorse this event. And again, to be clear, she's not doing this as the school board director. But I do think it's very hard, if not impossible, to separate both of those roles, at least from an optics perspective, when you're doing things like this. Now, I asked her via email, hey, what would you have to say to people who think that this is not appropriate, that this venue is not appropriate? She said, as this is a public event at a private business, anyone uncomfortable with the location may choose not to attend. And yes, that's true, but you're not really getting at the question, which is, why are you doing it at a sex shop? I understand that you can do it. No one's suggesting that you can. The criticism is that you should not do that. You should not do that. And she didn't really answer that question. But, you know, looking at the website for Wink Wink, it becomes clear that she's working hard to create what's called a sex-positive culture. But I don't know if this is a sex-positive culture to bring young children into a space where she also happens to teach the fine art of fellatio, or Sex Toys 101. And yes, there's a fine art, which I did not realize. Maybe I shall sign up for said class because I find that curious. It's an art, not a science, folks. Although I would argue it's also a science. I mean, if you want the right end result, it's biology. Well, it's true. Don't give me that look.
Well, we're not biologists, Jason. Who are we to say?
Maybe we could. We could be. One was called Feeling Myself, Self-Pleasure Pointers. I don't experience pleasure ever, so I'm not going to attend that one. Wait, let me touch my shoulder. No, didn't work. The event posting, the listing for the open mic is right next to a workshop called Non-Monogamy for Newbies. So I'm hopeful that the parents and the kids who RSVP don't RSVP to the wrong event. I hope they actually RSVP to the right one. Now, there is a growing number of folks in the community who have reached out to me complaining about this, and they're wondering whether or not they should protest the event. But some are concerned that it's going to be twisted as them being anti-gay, which they're not being anti-gay or anti-queer. They're just saying introducing children to a sex shop at a young age is just inappropriate. And I think that they're right. There's this movement to introduce sex and sexuality to children at a young age because they want to destigmatize the topic, or they want you to be a little bit more comfortable around it. But I would argue that Jen Mason and Wink Wink, these are examples of just taking the movement too far. She posts on in the email to me, she says, Wink Wink offers a space for people, including queer folks, to ask questions and learn about sexuality in an accepting, safe, and shame-free environment. We receive extensive sexual health training and are a knowledgeable, inclusive community resource, something severely lacking around sexuality in our culture. And I think that is a fair point to make. And I don't even necessarily disagree with that. I would simply say that there is a huge difference between wanting a kid to be comfortable asking questions about sex, and kids have those questions, but it's ultimately deemed awkward for them to ask. You feel awkward as an adult talking about some of these topics. I think it is an admirable position to say we want to create a space in which kids can feel comfortable asking legitimate questions. The problem is there's a lot of room between that position and introducing, you know, an 11-year-old to the world of sex toys and fellatio. I just think that that's not appropriate. And I don't believe that my position here is outside the norm. I think that that is the reasonable position, including the folks who want to, you know, destigmatize sex or whatever language you want to use. I think most reasonable people can look at this and say, this goes too far. And you're not wrong for calling it out. You're not a bigot either. I don't know how anyone could perceive this as being anti-LGBT. It's not. Go ahead and have an LGBT if you want. Again, you can have your open mic. I don't know any four-year-olds who are going to be like, I am a transgender two-spirit lesbian, and I would like to do slam poetry. I feel like you're probably not going to find that kid. There's no such thing as a queer two-year-old. It's for kids 0 through 18. Will you find a 17-year-old? Yeah, you will. Or a 13-year-old? Yeah, 12 maybe. 11? 10? No, you're not. You're just not. They don't know. They have no clue. Because they're not able to even conceptualize what that actually means, gender identity or sexuality. And I don't think we have to push them to go down into that world of reflection, self-reflection at that age. I think they should do it, certainly. And I'm not a prude. Go ahead and have conversations with kids about sex in a sex ed perspective. But this just goes too far. If you want to get more details, you want to help me shine a spotlight on it, just text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to the number 1-800-465-8770. Text R-A-N-T-Z to 1-800-465-8770. And I'll send you a link to my blog where you can read it.
Does it contain the links to the classes that you mentioned?
Yeah,
earlier?
They do, actually. The events page.
Okay, good. No, I'm asking for a friend.
I know which one you were interested in.
Asking for a friend.
Non-monogamy. I hope you're listening, fiance.
Look.
I hope you're listening.
Jason, did you not hear me when I clearly said I'm asking for a friend?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know you said that.
That okay. That's what I said.
Are you asking for her?
No.
Are you asking for the third you're interested in introducing into your relationship? That's weird.
No.
And I would not do that on the radio.
Nope. I would not do that on the radio either.
This is a children-friendly show.
After what we just talked about?
Well, especially after that. If you missed my appearance yesterday on Newsmax, whatever show I was on, I don't even know. I don't know what I was on, but I was on Newsmax.
Do you even know what the host's name was?
I don't, if I'm being honest.
Jason.
I have no idea. I didn't have to say their names. Well, because it's new to me. I don't normally...
Have some respect.
I don't normally do Newsmax, and I'm starting to do more of it. They've invited me onto about 1,000 shows in the next just week. So I'll learn.
And you don't even do the bare minimum of knowing what show or who's the host of
said
show.
I know America was in the title, or American. I just don't, but it's not America's News because that's Fox. In any case, if you missed it, I posted it on our Facebook page, facebook.com/JasonRantsShow. Push the button.
What's trending?
Cannabis.
Okay, that's another poorly mixed.
Darren said he fixed it.
Well, he very clearly didn't.
Darren said he fixed it.
Play it one more time. And you tell me that sounds... Are we doing this again? This
yeah,
bit? Is he here?
I'm not letting you yell at him again. I think
play that one more time.
What's trending? Cannabis.
That clearly doesn't match. It almost sounds like it's two different women who are reading it. And it's the same person.
I say you let the texters give us feedback on it. How does that sound? Text in.
It's awful.
1-800-465-8770.
So let's talk about pot shops. Because they've been getting targeted for crime here in Washington. We've done a ton of stories. And when you look at why, it kind of makes sense. These are easy targets because you've got a whole bunch of cash on the premises. They seldom have security. And as long as you can get in and out of the shop quickly, which you can if it's just a simple robbery, you know that police are unable to, because of staffing, they're likely unable to respond quick enough to stop you or to catch you in the act. Because even if you're pulling out of the parking lot when they get there, under the current law, thank you, Democrats, the police aren't allowed to pursue. That's what the law says. And so they have been getting targeted. And in King County, they took notice, thanks to Reagan Dunn, King County Council member, and he decided to push something called the Cannabis Safety Task Force. And it actually passed. This was a rare bit of bipartisanship. Ocean Greens, which sounds like a strain of weed, but it's actually the name of a pot shop owner.
Yeah, At first, I couldn't tell if it was...
That sounds like a weed strain,
I couldn't
right?
tell if it was a product, a store, yeah. or a person.
I don't know many strains, but Blue Dream is definitely one of them. I remember that because I was like, oh, that sounds so pleasant. But Ocean Greens is his name. He told Como TV that he's happy that the council decided to move forward and actually pass this.
Fantastic that they really taken it this to heart and they want to help the cannabis industry in general.
Now, Como lists only about 70, and I say only, but 70 robberies statewide since the beginning of the year. I think it's way more than that. And I've been following a pot industry guy. He owns a bunch of pot shops. And they've been keeping their kind of unofficial tally of all the crimes. And he's got way more than 70. He's got more than 100. Now, the task force is going to use the King County Sheriff's Office, the prosecutor's office, different weed business owners, pot shop owners, and members of the community. They're going to come together to find resources to help officers be able to prevent these robberies as best as they can with the resources that they have.
I think the best thing to do is to continue pressuring the federal government to give us access to, cashless transactions.
Meaning you can't really bank at this point because of the federal classification of weed. But in the meantime, you're going to have to do something. Now, Reagan Dunn will be on the show in the 5 o'clock hour. And I know one of his ideas is actually kind of an interesting one. That you've got King County Sheriff's deputies needing to do paperwork. So why not do paperwork at random pot shops? Not inside the store. You wouldn't want to get a contact high. But do it from your deputy's vehicle in the parking lot. And basically you're serving as a disincentive for a criminal to come and target that business. You're basically security, as it were. And you're actually able to get whatever job done that you have to get done, like the paperwork. I think that's a good idea. Now, here's a problem that I think they're going to run into, and I'll ask him about this. Won't there be other business owners who say, hey, what about us? What about us? You realize we're also having an increase in these kinds of robberies on, say, grocery stores or corner stores, those kinds of things. What about them? And I think that that's a reasonable response. I think that that's a reasonable concern from folks to say, hey, we want special protection too. Have you seen the string of ATM break-ins and theft? What about our shops? So I don't know what they're going to have to, how they'll address that, but I can tell you that they need more deputies. We're short about a little over 100 deputies with the King County Sheriff's Department. They don't have the staff to provide any extra than what they might be doing here. Here's Reagan Dunn.
Ways in which we can make these stores less dependent on cash. And some of that requires a federal fix, but some of that can happen here locally through a variety of mechanisms. And that's what this task force will get to the bottom of.
So we'll see whether or not they're going to be successful. It's something, it's a step in the right direction. And it sends the message that, hey, thieves, we take this seriously. So instead of stealing from these pot shops, we just go buy some Ocean Greens. That's a good strain.
You can't buy the person.
Yeah, but they should name a strain after him. Push the button.
What's trending? The economy.
You see how that matched?
You're back
that?
On
okay,
this?
I'm that just was... saying, that was a good mix.
Don't tell me. Tell the production people.
You just told me I couldn't yell at him.
I know, because I think he's still hurt from the last time you yelled at him.
Is he in there, though?
The lights are on. He's really good about turning his lights off when
yeah,
he
that's,
leaves.
Yeah, that's just sort of flaunted. $1.7 trillion, that's generally speaking the amount of student loan debt that's owed right
oh,
now.
Good. We're going down then?
$1.7 trillion.
That's not too much.
You know, it's at that point, it's not even real money. But I'm being told by the White House and the new press secretary, Karine Jean-Pierre, that canceling student loans wouldn't impact inflation.
The impact on inflation by pausing federal loan repayments would be almost negligible, in his words, something like 0.001%.
Okay. So you mean to tell me we can add $1.7 trillion to our debt at a time where we're already seeing high inflation, in large part because we started to spend billions and billions and billions of dollars that we didn't need to during a time in our economy that we didn't really make any difference except to increase inflation? You're telling us that that has no impact on inflation? Oh, okay, wow. So weird how all the policies that include spending trillions of dollars do not impact inflation at all when Democrats do it. I don't quite understand that. I thought I had a general understanding about how these things work. Because this is not, you'd have to basically print more money, right, in a abstract way to handle this. $1.7 trillion is a lot of money last time I checked. Like, just because it has a lot of zeros doesn't mean that it's just $0 that you're spending. That big number at the beginning of that long string of numbers actually matters? Unless you're a Democrat who, I guess, thinks that, not that big of a deal. Whatever. It's just some money. Stop complaining all the time. It's just, don't you want free money? No, I kind of like, weirdly like working for my paycheck. It gives me a sense of value of what I provide. I like to look at Peyton and tell him how much more money than he makes, I make, you know.
Yeah, you really do enjoy that.
But then I'm all like, what did you do today? I cut some audio. What did I do today? Nothing. I prepped a show. I wrote a blog. I did research for a TV hit tomorrow that I actually think got canceled, so I won't promote it. You know, that's what I do. That's why I make $1.7 million a year. And you, which, by the way, is a pay cut for me.
Yeah.
I took a cut so that we can give you more money. And how many pennies did we give you more an hour?
7 pennies an hour.
I can take it back if you'd like. I will happily go ahead and make $1.3 million and $1 more a year.
No, I'll keep my pennies.
Yeah, pennies. They add up.
I know that they do. Thank you for reminding me.
You're welcome. I made like 21 cents today. And I gave you, what did I give you? A quarter. And what did I tell you to do with the change? What did I tell you? Return it. But you said you didn't have any pennies. So I said, okay, fine. Just this time. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send a text. 1-800-465-8770. Welcome back to the Jason Rantz Show. We're live on this Wednesday afternoon. Thank you so much for tuning in. Yes, it's only Wednesday. I know. I feel it. We had another one of those days where it was just incredibly ugly in the morning, and then all of a sudden it got really, really nice again. It's incredibly windy, which I love. But
you're a wind guy?
I love the wind. Here's my favorite weather, okay? I know you're going to say, oh, it's weird. Here's my number one favorite weather. It's cold enough to wear a jacket or sweater, but it's sunny enough to have to wear sunglasses. I love that weather more than anything.
I'm with you on that. I think that's number one.
Oh, it's the absolute best weather, and we just got out of, technically, we just got out of that season, like towards the end, about 2-3 weeks in before spring, into the first two-ish weeks of spring. That's when we generally get that weather, and sometimes in early winter as well. It kind of depends. That's number one. You throw in some wind. Oh, I love it. That's just a little perk, but it has to be in the right. It can't be windy and rainy. I don't like that.
You want just sunny and windy?
Like in my world of cold but sunny, you throw in some wind, vicious wind, the kind that will knock you over. And sometimes does, and then I can point to the person and pretend I'm not laughing at them, but showing real concern over their well-being. I love it.
Boy, you would love Ellensburg, because let me tell you, that place gets 300 days of sun. Half of that is freezing cold, sunny, and just windy as all get out.
Been to Ellensburg.
I know you have.
Don't love it.
You were pleasantly surprised by
Ellensburg.
I was
pleasantly surprised. Yes, that's true. Not pleasantly surprised by a stupid comment that Jay Inslee made today, because... Again, he makes stupid comments all the time. He is responding to calls from Republican lawmakers to get rid of the gas tax, even if it's just temporary, because we've got, I believe it's the third highest gas tax in the entire country. And we're very clearly paying an arm and a leg at the pump. It was over $5.30 just over the weekend. In South Seattle. And again, it's going to change the price of gas depending on where. What was the last time you had to fill up? What was it?
503 on Monday.
Like, that's absurd. I'm assuming you got that more in Bonnie Lake.
In Bonnie Lake at Costco, who's got the cheapest gas.
Yeah, that's absurd. That's absolutely absurd.
The place right next to my house, which is like a Chevron that always has the premium, I think right now, is like $5.67.
That is nuts. You can't give us any help here, Jay Inslee. We can't just temporarily cut the gas tax. Here's the reason why he says we can't.
All that money would just go to the oil companies. It's not going to go into our pockets. They will just turn around and increase their prices. They know where the pain point is. They know how far they can raise the price and still have us buy gas.
Oh my God.
And they will raise that cost to that point, which is where it is right now.
He is the dumbest human being in the history of the world because, number one, that's not how gas prices are set, dummy. Which he has to, he either is truly the dumbest person in the world or he thinks you're the dumbest person in the world. And I'll certainly concede it's possible that both are true for him. But that's not how gas prices are set. But let us pretend we live in a world in which what he just said is how the world works, how gas prices work. Okay, let's live in that world. That I guess OPEC and the oil companies at large, it's a big cabal, and they say, we will push it to the price. But okay, explain this to me, dummy. I shouldn't say, explain this to me, Governor Dummy. Why is it that only now, during a time in which people can't afford the higher prices because the economy is not where it once was, why would they do this now and not say, oh, I don't know, when the economy was thriving pre-COVID? Why is that? When we actually could afford it, because the economy under Trump up until the pandemic, the economy, if you recall, and most of you do, the economy was killing it. We had record low unemployment rates, and that was actual unemployment rates. People actually had jobs, and they were making a lot more, and the economy was going well. Why wouldn't they raise the prices to $5.64 or whatever it was in Bonnie Lake? Why wouldn't they do that back then? Any guesses? Why was it in the dollar and change range? I'm curious, Governor Inslee. No answer. No one asked that follow-up question, I guess. They just said, oh, well, hey, we got our little clip. We can go back, put it into a King 5 story. We got our little snippet. We can't really piss him off too much because we need access. That's why I can't stand local news for the most part. There's some really good local reporters, but local news, unfortunately, on the political side, they have to not piss off the people that they need access to, which is why this show is successful in not caring if I have access to Governor Inslee, and that means I get to call him Governor Dum-Dum. I would say it to his face. You don't think I would, but I would.
I really don't think that you would.
I would. I'll say, Governor, we lovingly, just as a joke, we lovingly, I'll play it down. We lovingly call you Governor Dum-Dum. But the thing is, he was like, oh, that's adorable.
Like, oh, thank you for giving me a nickname.
Yeah, I think he'd actually like that. And then I would give him, I would reach into my pocket, pull out some stones, and say, here, go skip some stones in the lake over there.
He's always skipping stones.
He likes it. It keeps him.
Is there no other activities that this man takes up? No hobbies?
He's got plenty. He can paint.
Tell me this guy doesn't collect stamps. He looks like a huge stamp collector.
He kind of does look like a stamp collector, actually. I'm with you on that one. He does look like a stamp collector. But he also looks like someone who collects like souvenir mugs from places, like the free crappy ones that you get. Like sometimes McDonald's will do those weird...
Oh, yeah. The giveaway things. Yeah.
Or Denny's or something. I'll have the fresh and fruity whatever. Just so he can get that little mug, and then he'll just like.
He does seem like a collector of sorts, though.
And then he'll just clap, like, oh, Trudy, look what I got. And he'll clap like a dum-dum, and then he won't even eat the food. He'll just leave with the cup. That's all he came there for. I mean, you could have just asked for the cup. I'm sure they would have. You didn't have to order the Rudy Tooty Fresh and Fruity. He just likes to say it over and over and over again. Rudy Tooty Fresh and Fruity, just over and over and over again. Governor, calm down. I want Rudy Tooty Fresh Fruity for Trudy. Yeah, we got it. Oh, my God. So there's that. Why? Don't give me that look. I have an answer to a question that has kept people up at night. After CNN Plus went under less than 17 seconds after it turned on the power, everyone was wondering. Everyone was worried about the future of Chris Wallace. This is a guy who, despite the lack of personality, was able to, you know, establish Fox News. Fox News was nothing until it got Chris Wallace. Like, he's the reason why people watch. I mean, sure, Tucker Carlson might be the number one rated show in cable news history. Sean Hannity might be doing exceptionally well. Outnumbered and The Five, high rated. But people actually only know about Fox News because of Chris Wallace and his journalistic integrity. So everyone was worried about him. It was weird that he could build Fox News, but not CNN Plus. I was shocked. I was personally shocked. Well, now we know where he landed. And it's actually not far from where he just failed. He will now be still on CNN, except now they're adding him to, oh my God, HBO Max. Here's the CNN president, Chris Licht, the new one installed because of the Discovery connection.
We are excited to announce that Who's Talking to Chris Wallace will return to production this fall.
But no one wants to talk to him, so it's going to get canceled.
How fast will this one take?
13 seconds.
With episodes on HBO Max.
Why?
And on our CNN linear channel on Sunday evenings. Chris's show is part of what we're calling CNN Sunday. It's a unique opportunity for your brands to appear alongside our premium content.
These are at the upfront, so you're getting in front of advertisers to get them riled up. And as you can hear from the crowd, everyone was like, ooh, Chris Wallace on, you're calling it what, CNN Sunday? So it's just CNN programming on a Sunday? What about CNN Friday? Oh, we don't call it that. But you have it? Yeah, it's just CNN on a Friday. So this will definitely save CNN. I think that Chris Wallace will do to CNN what he did to Fox News, which is just really put it on the map again for CNN, because that's really what it needed, a Sunday night show hosted by Chris Wallace. Who's talking to Chris Wallace? No one ever asked. You're naming the show after a question that no one asks and no one wants the answer to. No one thought of that? No one thought that maybe you should title it something that doesn't have an answer of, who cares? I don't care. Who you're asking me? I don't know. I don't care. What do you mean? Who's talking? I don't care. Who's talking to Chris Wallace? I don't know who. No, I don't even answer. I don't care. That's got to be the only thing that happens after you say, who's talking to Chris Wallace?
Maybe they're going to name it that because they're only going to interview people that nobody actually knows. They're going to be so deep into agencies. So it actually will be a relevant question of
his
who's
first
talking
guest,
to Chris Wallace.
His first guest will be the guest that we were pitched yesterday, to which I was offended by.
Some actress of some
sort? Some random actress from a soap opera. I have no idea why they pitched her to us. And what was my... Well, you can't quote what I said in response to the email, but what was the gist of my response?
You asked who that was.
And then I said what?
You said no, firmly.
Yeah. But, I mean, with lots of colorful language. Who's talking to Chris Wallace? I feel like there's a bit there. A good bit. I feel like I should pitch this one to Tucker. I've been wanting to go after Chris Wallace on air for a while. A long while.
You've been wanting to do that?
Yeah. On TV, I've been wanting to do it.
What's holding you up?
They don't book me for that. I get booked on serious stories. I have a serious career on the TV side of topics that I cover.
Oh, you do?
I generally don't talk about... I don't make... except for that one segment I did where I held up a piece of art that I made in studio. That was fun.
You go on TV?
Every once in a while. I mean, 340 times in the last 2.5 years. But who's counting?
Wow, I had no clue.
My TV career is, I would be considered a veteran compared to Chris Wallace at CNN Plus. I would be a literal TV veteran with a storied career if I compared it to Chris Wallace on CNN Plus.
Chris Wallace called and asked you to be a guest on...
In a heartbeat. I would go on that show so quickly and I would get into it with him so easily. Because what would he talk to me about? What am I known for? Crime stories, probably, or homelessness? You think he knows what he's talking about on that?
I don't know if Chris Wallace ever knows what he's talking about.
That's a fair point. That's a fair point. Push the button. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show. Thank you so much for tuning in on this Wednesday afternoon. Really do appreciate it. Earlier today in D.C., the House Judiciary Committee held what is commonly referred to as political theater. This one was on the topic of abortion access, and really it was just a way to get cable news outlets to refocus its attention on what they think will be a good sort of political distraction that will help them come the midterm elections, although very clearly, yet again, yesterday suggested that that's definitely not going to happen. But it was all about the end result of overturning Roe v. Wade, which just simply gives the states the power to determine its own policies on abortion. In most cases, I would argue, you're not going to see anything different than what you currently see. There'll be some states that get triggered by this because of the laws that they have. They're not so triggered by the story, but they have laws that are triggered to go into place to ban abortion once Roe v. Wade gets overturned. But again, those are states that generally are already leaning towards policies that restrict abortion. In any case, you got exactly what you thought you would get, which is a whole bunch of crazy people saying crazy things that are not even really remotely close to any kind of reality, including this comment by Dr. Yashika Robinson. She's with a group called Physicians for Reproductive Health, which is an odd way to talk about this because this is not about health, not for the child, and ultimately not for the mother in most cases. But she's making the claim that overturning Roe v. Wade will kill a whole bunch of people. And by the way, it's white supremacy in action.
Systemic barriers, racism, and white supremacy are at the root of both our maternal health crisis and our abortion access crisis. It is undeniable that without access to abortion, maternal mortality rates will continue to rise. I cannot emphasize enough that abortion is essential health care.
Okay, not for the child. But they will continue to rise if you overturn Roe v. Wade. What will continue to rise? Maternal death. Mothers who die during childbirth. But when you say it will continue to rise, what does that imply? It's gone up when? recently. I don't know when they're starting their review of the maternal deaths, but continuing to rise when abortion right now is legal. So when you say it will continue to rise to after you get rid of abortion, does that make logical sense? If it's already rising during, what basically she's saying and what the actual argument should be is, or statement should be, no matter what happens as it relates to abortion, it's going to continue to rise. It's been rising during abortion and it will rise afterwards. Meaning abortion has no role in this particular issue. The women who are dying during childbirth or as a result of complications due to childbirth, what are they not getting done? What procedure are they not getting done? Any ideas? Say abortion.
Abortion.
Because they're maternal deaths. These are women who are dying as a mother, as a pregnant woman. They could choose to get the abortion now, correct? It's legal? Yeah, so other than the ludicrous word salad of white supremacy, what's the logic of her argument? Seriously, what is the logic of that argument? It doesn't make any sense. Yeah, systemic barriers, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, I got that part. But your main talking point is based in just nonsense. And speaking of which, here's another bit of nonsense from someone who apparently doesn't understand what court packing is. Representative Gay Scanlon, Democrat. She said, the conservatives have packed the court, and that's wrong, or something.
Some of our colleagues have suggested that the purpose of this hearing is to pressure the Supreme Court's decision in the Dobbs case.
It is.
I would suggest that our Republican colleagues, and particularly Mitch McConnell, have already exercised undue influence on the Supreme Court's decision by packing the court with far-right justices.
Okay, well, you don't know what the term court packing means, or you hope that others don't. Court packing is not the practice of going through the process of nominating and supporting judges or whomever, nominees, to get onto the court. That's literally the system. Court packing is what Democrats want to do, which is add members to the court so that they can only get the results that conform to their political ideology. Simply putting someone on the court in a vacant seat, that's not court packing. Dum-dum. That's not court packing. And she's got to know that, right? She knows that. Is it court packing right now to put a liberal on it? And if there was another opening and then putting another liberal, is that court packing? No, it's the literal process of putting someone on the Supreme Court. That is how it's supposed to be. Court packing, again, is what the Democrats are trying to do so that they don't lose any cases, which is, last time I checked, more like fascism, more like one-party rule than what any conservative is proposing. Oh, what are they proposing? Nothing. Conservatives aren't proposing any changes to the court. We understand that we win some and we lose some. And by the way, we've lost quite a few big ones because of John Roberts, who was put on the court by a Republican president, hoping that he would vote in line with conservative principles. Has he done that? No, he has not. So this court packing garbage is such a ridiculous talking point. Ugh. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text. 1-800-465-8770.